welcome to episode 158 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and this week I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard and the awesome vigilante story Viper. It's Dan Butcher.
Oh, hello, that changed.
Nice. Ah, I like to mix it up.
Yeah.
We are one beard down this week, as Tony Esmond couldn't be with us. But fear not, because we have drafted in a substitute, Esmond. Sorry, I didn't mean to introduce you like that. I've got a far better intro, and here it is. He's the creator behind the successful The Sheep and the Wolves, and he's the artist for Cockney Kung Fu. He's an aficionado of old school and European comics, and he's an all-round top geezer and one of the family. It is, of course, Nick Prolix. Hello.
Hello.
You're Nick.
Good, thanks.
We've been talking for about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I spunked all my best stuff.
Already, so this is going to be a long hour and a half. No.
Not the first time.
Spunked it all over the lower back. No, you got to carry on.
Jesus.
The chat.
Yeah, of course. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can be as filthy as possible tonight for Tony.
Yeah, in honour of him.
Yeah.
He's not dead, by the way.
No, he's not. No. He's just busy. But, yeah. You know, he's still in contact with us. Actually, that does make it sound like he's dead.
Yeah. Tony is alive and well. Let's put that to bed.
Yeah. And we miss him, but this is already going to go hella crazy, I can already tell. You know what else is crazy, Dan?
Is it the Comic House?
It is indeed. Website? It's the amazing amount of independent comics that you can find on Comic House.
Brilliant.
And of course, it's my terrible weekly segues for our sponsor. Yes, Comic House are our sponsor. And they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles on the database, loads of awesome stuff. And also, if you self-publish, then you can list your book on their website for free. And when you sell a copy, they'll only take one pence commission. So in this world of self-publishing, where every penny counts, that's awesome. They have
I've been banging this drum on bloody Twitter. Like, if you've got an independent comic, you should try and get it on there.
Yeah.
Is this more eyeballs than your comic?
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. And, like, especially, they have the option to sell the hard copies as well. It's just another avenue to sell more of your stock.
Yeah.
I know most people have a big cartel or an Etsy or this, that, and the other, but, you know, there's another avenue there. And plus, if you've got digital copies of your comic, which you all should, I think, in this day and age, then Comic House has their own app, and you can put it on there, and people can read it for free, essentially. Well, £3 a month subscription, but that's nothing in the grand scheme of things, is it?
Yeah,
when you compare it to your weekly books. I mean, as we speak, we're recording this early, and Comixology this week, I spent a lot more on there than I normally do. Much more than £3.
Yeah.
And that was only for a few books, really. So, yeah, Comic House is an amazing value. And they've got loads of awesome stuff on there. What have they got on there, Dan?
Well, just flicking through the Future Quake issues. It looks like they've got the entire run straight up to, so I can tell, issue 14? 16.
See, I haven't read any of that, and I think I definitely need to. So it's a great avenue.
Yeah, I think I just jumped straight into the one where the guy on the front, the Axis of Evil, issue 6. So I should really go back and read the rest.
Nice.
Yeah, so many more titles being added all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And plus, they've got stuff from IDW, Dynamite, as well as so many brilliant indie...
Marcosia.
UK and US and beyond comics. Yeah, so it's only getting bigger as well. So if you want to find out more and to start your 14-day free trial, then go to comichouse.com. And as always, we thank them for their continued sponsorship and putting up with these hellish sponsorship ads. Right, okay, this week, you know, because we've got some events coming up, we've recorded early, we thought we'd go for a sort of a looser, like a freestyle, good old fashioned comic talk episode.
Mm.
Nick's good for the money, aren't you, Nick?
Yeah,
see, he's a man, we won't be able to shut him up, as you can tell. So this is going to be an episode full of unfiltered opinions, questions from all of us, and like, all sorts is going to be flying about, as Nick already mentioned earlier at the start of the show. Now, what I did with this topic in mind, I did put a post on the Awesome Comics Talk Facebook group, which was basically, we're going to talk about the state of small press comics and indie publishing, and just basically have a comic talk episode. Do you have any questions or, you know, things to discuss? And that initiated all sorts of chatter. It sort of went off on one. So much so that Nick was a bit worried when he saw the amount of questions that were coming in, weren't you, Nick?
Yeah, so I've only got an hour. I've got stuff to do, you know.
Yeah, and much like every, well, the Awesome Comics Talk group is great anyway, but there was lots of discussion going on there. We'll cover some of it. We'll definitely touch on a few of the questions and discuss them. Some of them we won't, because maybe they've touched upon subjects that will be future episodes of the podcast and focused on, and some we just may not get around to. We'll see how it goes. We're all topless and we've got cold drinks because it's still the summer, and
I've got my top on. That's a lie. So,
really?
Yeah. I'll take it off live if you want on the show.
Do it now. Go on.
I'm doing it now.
Go on. Oh.
There we go.
Yes.
I don't want to make a lie.
Oh dear. Oh, I don't know about you, but I don't know what to say about that. already, this may be the sexiest show we've done in weeks. And we haven't even got to talking about comics yet. Okay, right. Small press comics, indie publishing. It's thriving at the moment, but what do you guys think? I always like to, you know, I think every so often this show should just stop and just sort of say, okay, what is the state of small press and indie publishing as it stands? Because we've been doing this show for 3 years now, and a lot has happened in those years. So let's just take stock and talk about it. So what do you think of the state of sort of indie publishing at the moment?
Nick, do you want to take that one?
I feel like a bit of imposter syndrome, I guess.
What are you talking about?
Trying to... having kind of, for all intents and purposes, I guess, like, you know, maybe a year and a half of putting out a comic, going to cons and stuff. So in terms of, like, you know, kind of like my like an idiot abroad's kind of take on, you know, this world that I've kind of discovered pretty recently, I always think of there not being like one scene, you know, one thing called small press. Like, you know, it seems to me that there's lots of like pockets of activity, right? You know, kind of, and they're sort of like geographically, you know, distributed in different places. You've got, you know, different scenes happening in different, and kind of, when you do cons in different places, you kind of tap into those. Like, you know, when you head down to the True Believers or the Cardiffs or the Swansea, you meet a whole load, obviously, of our Welsh compatriots, but you get that kind of animation crowd that's kind of, you know, around Cardiff. And, you know, in a lot of their work, there's similarities, but there's also, you know, obviously massive differences, but, you know, you get a sense of this kind of really sort of vibrant community, you know, like a community of practice, you know, these people that if they don't, not necessarily collaborating on projects, although probably actually I think, you know, a lot of them are collaborating, you know, they're you know, supporting each other, you know, sharing each other's work, you know, G-ing each other on, or even like, you know, that sort of little bit of kind of, you know, oh, you did that, I'm going to try and up my game now to do even better.
Friendly as well, but do you think there's a strong sort of competitive nature within the small press and indie publishing?
I mean, I would say so to a degree,
I mean, competitive almost makes it sound negative, isn't it? Like we're trying to outdo each other.
Oh, yeah, no negative connotation.
Yeah, yeah. I think
constantly seeing what someone else is doing and trying to push yourself harder.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, because I mean, the amount of times like I see something amazing, and I have that moment where you just hang your head and just think, why am I doing this when they can do that? But then it's all about pushing yourself forward and trying to make the next thing better, isn't it? Really. So hopefully, I mean, I think this sort of scene that we're in, you know, this niche within a niche that we're in, is, you know, it's so much more varied and vibrant than it has been for a long time. I would say. But then again, maybe doing this show and meeting more people is purely because it's opened my eyes to it. You know, who's to say what it was like in 2012 before I actually had a table? You know, I mean, I like to think it's growing and it's getting better, but, you know.
It's a tricky one. Like you said about kind of going to see other people's work, it's kind of saying, I can't remember it and I don't really want to butcher it, but essentially don't judge yourself against that kind of work, which fuck knows how long they've been working on that on. But you see it there and you think, Christ, why can't I do that? But you don't see them working on that for months, maybe years beforehand to get it to that state. And I've had that before. You look at stuff and you think, fucking hell, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But, I imagine we all go through that, and that's a kind of very much an artist's thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of projects take a long time in gestation and stuff. I mean, we talked about the book Eternal, came out at the beginning of the year. Amazing, wonderful. Comes out, it's a complete piece that people love, but that took a good few years of just work, you know, leading up to that one point. You know, people don't always see the behind the scenes or the, you know, the struggles to get things made.
Well, I think one of the things with small press is, like, now globally, there's so many more platforms for people to get comics to people. We're just talking one comic house.
Yeah.
We've got, obviously, Comixology, so many platforms. With Kickstarter and stuff, you can back small little projects that someone started across the other side of the world and have that comic in your hands in a couple of months after you've pledged. It's a strange one.
Do you think, you know, playing devil's advocate here, do you think because everyone essentially can make a comic in this day and age, everyone can make a comic, everyone can make a film, everyone can make music, etc., you know, because the avenues to get it out, to get your work out there, are easier. But because of that, you're also getting an influx of stuff that, if we're going to be honest, isn't up to snuff.
It's substandard.
It is substandard. And a lot of the times sometimes I've sent, like, covers. I think it was earlier today I sent a cover or two to Dan and Tony, just sort of saying, look at this cover. And the response was, what the hell?
It was strange because, like, it was on Comixology, but it was very kind of amateurish. This sounds rude, like shitting on someone's work, but I thought also Comixology have got some kind of, have they not got any kind of quality control there to say we should allow this or not? But then that gets very subjective. And
There's a weird thing about like kind of quality and value, I guess. Mm. I think about this. I spend a lot of time watching shit on Netflix.
Yeah, right? It's a lot of
just kind of, you know, clicking on some random film that's stuck on there or something. And or like a TV show, and you just sort of think, this is, you know, this is terrible. Yeah. This is objectively terrible.
It's
rubbish, you know, it's written awfully, you know, the acting is you know, it's mediocre, you know, the story, blah, 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 whatever. It feels like it's written by, you know, like a teenage boy, you know, it's just a load of, like, adolescent nonsense. Mm. And you're like, you know, but this is like a blockbuster movie, or, you know, this is, you know, this has got a TV show that's been, you know, they had 2, 3, 4 seasons of this crap, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like, you know, even just like, you know, like Arrow's bullshit, right? The first, you know, it's like one of the worst shows on TV. It's just rubbish, right? And it's like, how many, you know, I don't want to, you know, it's not like some shit, you know, I don't want to go into, what I mean is, like, you know, there are systems, you know, product out there, you know, industries that are built on churning out product, you know, and the, you know, the threshold of what constitutes you know, not even, you know, like the sort of pinnacle, you know, greatness, you know, sort of, you know, like, you know, like a Sopranos or the,
yeah,
or the, you know,
Wire.
Also, yeah, exactly. You know, even something like now, you know, Cloak and Dagger on Amazon Prime. You know, I think it's great, and I think it's actually, you know, it's head and shoulders above actually, you know, when we started on, you know, on Iron Fist. You know, just kind of absolute, you know, or even like, you know,
yeah. It's it's Marvel disappointing,
that,
I think.
You know, shit the bed halfway through the season, you know, and almost all of them. Anyway, and yet, and then with comics, right, where there's this kind of complete opposite end of the scale in terms of barrier to entry, you know, kind of, you know, what's the base level of entry that you need to, you know, can you, you know, you've got a piece of paper and a pen, you can get hold of a photocopier. Like, you can put out your mini comic, right? You don't even need a photocopier. You know, you can just, you know, draw it and fold your piece of paper up. You know, you can get a little 8-page little mini, you know, and you can have that at your, you know, at a table, and you can sell that and you can get it out there. You know, I think there's a kind of, I don't know where, you know, often welcome to my world, you know, there's no point to the end of the rambling, but you know, there is a, you know, sort of difference in terms of even the kind of poorest, even when you walk around a convention, you look at something, you just think, really?
Yeah.
You
know, but then you just think, you know,
someone's tried.
You've done it. You've made
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's but thing, and it's like, you know,
I think digital blurs that, though, at the same time. I mean, when I walk around a convention, yes, some of these books aren't for me, but, and anyone making a comic, by the way, if you've created it, you know, once you've got a finished comic, you're a hero. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a lot of work, and, you know,
you've done good.
Yeah, I mean, just because we're subjective about some things and we think, oh, it's a bit subpar, you still can't take away the amount of work that it takes, you know, and the passion that people have to do this, because people want to make comics, and that, you know, how can you not love someone that wants to make comics? But I will say, even if I walk around a convention and there is stuff that isn't really my bag, or, you know, maybe some would say maybe not up to standard, or other people might like it, the level of quality on a convention floor is still higher than the general browse on a digital platform, I think, when so much can be uploaded. Because, you know, then you got people that can make comics, but they're not doing conventions. You know, they're not making the printed book, and because it's so easy to make a comic and just put it out there, I think some people rush things. I think that's probably the best way to put it, isn't it? Sometimes you're just rushing to do your 12-issue arc of something
and
before
get it done. And
yeah,
I can see what you mean. Like, you're kind of digitally, you're exposed to a lot more content, so maybe buying that, you're going to be exposed to a lot more crud. I mean, it's good to think like the cream will rise to the top, but something being popular doesn't necessarily mean that it's good.
Yeah.
As in, you pointing out Arrow, Nick.
Yeah.
But some people love Arrow.
Yeah.
It's totally, like you say, it's subjective, isn't it? You know,
it's a difficult one. I actually complained to Netflix UK, because this is a couple of months
ago. It's not like you complained, Dan.
Yeah, I was so incensed that I was browsing through and there was like a documentary. It was The World's Heaviest Man Gets Married. And I was like, I don't fucking pay a Netflix subscription to watch this shit. This is the kind of thing you would pour scorn on if it was like I'm living. But like the fact that someone's fucking Netflix.
I mean, Netflix
is good,
come on,
is a good idea.
Come on, Netflix. You're supposed to be like the comic house of film and TV.
But I think Netflix is, I mean, certainly for us, there's a reality TV wave that's been hitting it for the past year. More reality.
I don't need
TV.
Any of that fucking crap, man. That's all over the place.
Yeah, I know, but we can't escape it. We live in this world. I just
man,
love the fact that you have
that.
Such,
that
a, such a
full
problem.
Of shit.
I mean, there's such a massive selection on Netflix, but because you saw that, which you didn't watch, did you, Dan?
No, God,
You saw it, and it incensed you enough to complain.
Yeah, God, yeah.
That's like someone walking into a comic book shop, looking at the shelves and going, these are all amazing, what the hell's that? And then complaining to the comic shop.
No, I just kind of, I wanted to stop the rot. that was like the, I saw that as like the thin edge of the wedge. It was like, gotta fucking nip this in the bud straight away.
Already we've got two t-shirt ideas there. Stop the rot. And yeah.
The thin edge of the wedge. I was like, no way, can't be having that. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one.
I mean, we're certainly seeing more and more comics than we ever have before.
Yeah,
I think. I mean, you know, there's this phrase. I think sort of came up around video game. Kind of commentary on video games and like, you know, the enthusiast press. You heard that?
Oh, the Gamergate?
No. It's not, I'm not, you know, just this idea of like, you've got like the mainstream press and then you've got the enthusiast press. Like,
yeah. Right,
of,
gotcha, yeah.
You know, like kind of amateur, like as in non-professionals, yeah. You know, kind of bloggers, vloggers, you know, but, you know, the fans who kind of love, you know, got a passion for the medium, you know, in this case, video games, and you know, they're, you know, kind of, you know, they want to, you know, they want to talk about it, they want to hype, you know, and you end up getting a sort of situation where, you know, you've got, you know, your Edge and your Games Master, even, you know, kind of magazines on one hand, then you've got your, let's say, you've got your blogs and your, you know, the kind of online commentary. You know, turning, going to conventions, you know, the shows, the big kind of, you know, game, you know, and you know, reporting on, you know, the industry.
Yeah.
And I see that in the small press, but and I think the big difference with the small press in terms of comics, if you compare it to something like video games, is that you got that enthusiast strand, if you like. But it cuts across all parts of it. So you've got, like, you know, people are just making stuff. You know, you know your small presser is your enthusiast, you know, production. You know, they're just putting out stuff because they love the medium. They're putting it out. Some of the best shows are, you know, kind of mum and pup, kind of, you know, enthusiast.
Yeah.
You know, institutions, you know, they're put on by, you know, people, you know, with a passion, who love it, you know, and you've had them on the show talking about that. You know, you've got, you know, who are you, if you're going to put out a book, you know, I always think about, you know, where are the blogs that you're going to, you know, sort of send your book to be reviewed, you know, even if you're limiting it just to sort of off the top of your head, like, you know, sort of British blogs, you know, it's your Broken Frontier, it's your Pipe Dreams, it's your Down the Tubes, you know, they're the sort of, you know, the place to hang your cape, you know, they're the sort of, again, they're not professional, you know, they're people who've got a day job, you know, and they're running, you know, doing the, you know, Women Write About Comics, you know, all of the, you know, these kinds of sites that are doing the, you know, the reporting on the scene. Again, they're built on, you know, this idea of enthusiasm, of passion, of, you know, and even, you know, then when you think about actually where people are selling comics, you know, the majority of shops that you're talking about, these sort of the really great shops, are again, like, you know, kind of, you know,
smaller
independent, you know,
yeah,
shops that have, you know, and, you know, obviously they have their struggle.
Yeah,
it's just interesting to me that there's almost like a kind of, let's call it like a kind of, like a sort of, what's that one of the, you know, the two, the city in the city. Did you watch that one? You know, it's based on the China Miéville novel, you know, these two cities that are sharing the same space physically, you know, same geography, but, you know, the inhabitants of one city, you know, have to willfully ignore the inhabitants of the other city.
You know, familiar with that one.
It was a, there was a TV adaptation of it earlier in the year. But anyway, this idea that, you know, you've got this complete ecosystem that is kind of like a, in many ways, mirrors, you know, the sort of mainstream professional, you know, sort of big industry, if you like.
Yeah.
And it's just doing everything, but it's all being kind of run off of this kind of, you know, engine of, you know, enthusiasm and, you know, kind of desire to sort of see the, you know, passion to. So everyone's project is a passion project.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly.
And
it's kind of like they're kind of projects designed by, you've got the individual passion. It's not the committee where it's gone through and possibly made it kind of anodyne and kind of a bit.
But then there's like,
taking the edges off of it.
You know, like Al Murray is that, you know, pub landlord. You know, project, what do you do? I'm a project manager. You know, every time you take a shit, you know, you're a project manager. You know, there's like a, I don't know, like, you know, there's the plus. I think there's a real positive about the fact that everyone's thing that they've made is their, you know, they're proud of this thing that they've made. Yeah.
And I think there's certainly, there's been an uptake in communication between conventions and like independent comic book shops and the small press scene. I've certainly noticed more and more people getting their, you know, even if it's one or two books into a small shop.
Well, we only had it recently, the Small Press Day event.
Yeah.
And the Swindon shop as well. It's only for the better. Both parties benefit.
Yeah,
I think future kind of collaboration and work together is definitely the way to go in regards to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big questions, certainly for indie creators, over the next few years, is because we're having this sort of boom period, or we're riding the crest of the wave of this sort of boom period. Yes, we're still small fry when you know, if you look at the big picture. But you see these creators have been doing it for a long time, and you know, we've mentioned it on the show before. You know, this could be published by Boom, this could be published by this, but you know, we're talking, you know, these people are stepping up to levels that really, you know, they should be in comic book shops in America. You know, there should be publishers just grabbing these people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point that people are going to have to start getting to, how to take their product onto the next level. You know,
that's what a lot of people struggle with generally.
Yeah.
They like, they have a craft or a skill or something, and it's moving it from being something you're really good at to something which you can earn a living at. And
I mean, people don't necessarily, people say, oh, because of Kickstarter, you don't need a publisher. You don't need this. You can make your own books. And that's well and good, and that's great. And people use it for like pre-ordering systems, and people do really well on Kickstarter. And it's amazing. Lord knows I've got some wonderful books on my shelves because of Kickstarter that I've got direct from the creator, which is amazing. But, you know, on a week-to-week basis, you have all these, you know, even the up-and-coming like indie publishers, you know, got Vault Comics, you know, Aftershock.
Well, Turner are doing great with this newsprint thing. It's doing really well. And getting the comics back into shops, into kids' hands, because they're cheap enough to kids to pick them up.
Exactly, and it's, you know, it's, I think it's, creators need to start pushing their stuff maybe towards, you know, that maybe some of them towards the publisher. If they're feeling like they're hitting a brick wall, maybe push it, you know, see if they can get it published through other people.
So, I mean,
yeah, like, all right, can I
go on, devil's jump advocate in. Go for it.
Yeah.
Like, I think probably most publishers can fuck off. That's going to be like, I'm going to go with that as my starting point.
But what makes you, like, what into, makes you say, like, that in a sense?
All right, so I was thinking about Ditko, obviously, passed last week, and he was on Kickstarter. That's where he's been. Obviously, you know, it's not, it's with an editor, with a buddy, you know, and he was actually putting out his stuff, these kind of like Ditko packages, you know, he was doing them, you know, very much in that sort of mail order, you know, sort of model. And then with Kickstarter, was going to, using Kickstarter as a way of kind of, you know, of getting his his, you know, very idiosyncratic comics out to the people that wanted them, you know, whether they wanted them because they were, you know, they were vibing what he was, you know, what he had to say, or, you know, I think, you know, just, you know, to be honest, I don't think anyone reads a Ditko comic for the words, you know. You know, just getting it just to sort of see, you know, the art that he was still kind of producing. And, you know, if you've got Public Enemy going on Kickstarter to, you know, release their albums, you know, to sort of circumvent record labels. You know, you don't necessarily need
a publisher. Kickstarter does negate that, but also Kickstarter does not, you know, make, and it's certainly if you can keep making comics and do gangbusters on Kickstarter, so you don't need anyone, amazing. But I think some creators are hitting, you know, they'll have a successful Kickstarter, maybe the next one doesn't do too well, but they want to get their profile up, they want to, you know, get more work out there, you know, and Kickstarter is amazing, but you can't pin.
Yeah, it's horses for courses, isn't it? It's like, what do you want out of stuff? And this is what, sort of go back to that thing about, you know, there's lots of small presses. You know, there's lots of ways of being small press. Yeah. There's lots of ways of doing this thing. You know, like you look around, you know, you can go to a convention and you can see the people who are doing it sort of full time. You can see the people who are doing it, you know, doing their own stuff. You see the people who are doing kind of, you know, licensed comics, you know, and they're putting them out, and then they're doing a web comic of their own character, you know, on the side, you know, as a sort of, you know, they've got different, you know, I think if you're talking about profile, if you're trying to get in a position where, you know, you're not having to do all of the stuff, you know, you don't want to do the distribution, the fulfillment, you know, you don't want to have to be dealing with that side of things. Yes, you know, that's a publisher, you go to a publisher.
I think also with that, you're looking at more like career rather than sort of like, you know, hobbyist or self-published sort of like small time stuff.
But like, you know, Kickstarter and in terms of crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, Comixology, Comic House, Tapas, you know, Gumtree, whatever, you know, online distribution that you can access as an individual, you know, as a sort of solo creator or as a creative team or as a you know, little indie publisher, micro publisher, you can do all of that stuff. Like the idea of the idea of like you're doing stuff, because I think one of the questions in the Facebook group was like, you know, sort of what's people's goals in doing it, you know, what they're trying to get to, you know, are you trying to parlay a kind of, you know, small press comic into a career?
And I think that's the you know, important, you know, thing to sort of define, isn't it? What is your goal? If you've just got some stories to make and you want to make your stories, you know, and you're not all about like getting, I mean, it's wonderful if you can get in the big comic book shops or with a publisher. If you don't want that, you don't have to do it. But if you're thinking one day, you know, I want to do my stories, I think less and less these days people say, I want to work for Marvel, I want to work for DC. I hear more these days, I want to make my own stuff, and I can make it these days. But you know, to go from like the indies to the bigger publishers, it's certainly it's a very interesting step these days, because you have to be a decent popular independent creator before any other people sort of listen to you, really, don't you?
Well, you know, you see people at you know, at conventions going around with their portfolio under their arm, you know, great, you know, and they'll, you know, maybe they'll talk to an editor, or they'll talk to an artist who's, you know, got an inroad, you know, with a publisher somewhere, you know, they want to show their work, or those kinds of portfolio review sessions. Because I know Dan, you went to you had a portfolio review at London Super Comic Con, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I look at it, I see you've got a successful web comic. When you went to do that, what were you hoping to get from that? I can't remember.
Yeah, I went to Valiant. I honestly went in, I was just curious as to what the guy was going to say. I was just genuinely curious. And then he essentially was looking at it like, where would you fit in with a production schedule or crew? So like you got the pencil, you got the inker, you got the letterer, the colorist. So yeah. When I kind of like showed him complete comic books, I brought along a copy of El Marvo at the time and said, like, I've done this. And he's like, oh, you've done all this? I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, really, you need like an example of one or the other. And I'm not really interested in working in comics full time. I do it as kind of like for fun as a hobby. So I was just interested to kind of like get the feedback from him. And it was kind of like, okay, fair enough. It's not really too relevant. I was hoping to get a bit of storytelling feedback or art feedback. I didn't really get any of that. It was just all the people around me were I'd say a good 10-15 years younger than me, and they all had like pencils or ink samples of characters and stuff, but not one of them had a finished book or sequentials. So maybe it's just the people around me at the time.
Oh, like, okay, who's that at the door? Hang on. Is that... Hello, Tony.
All right, Tony.
Fancy seeing you.
How's the Renegade Master? How's he getting on?
He's doing all right.
I'm right.
Doing well. Yeah. This is the full awesome comic.
First time ever.
Yeah, really?
Well, yeah. Voltron.
After you published the comic.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm in another hotel. I've actually got... They've left like a decanter full of port in the corner for me.
How much of it have you drunk?
I was literally going to pour it out in a minute, but it looks a bit rank, but I'll drink it anyway. Fuck it.
Are you sure it's port?
It's not the urine thing left over from the last one.
Yeah.
I do leave a bit about.
Yeah, that's true.
You're balls deep in the comic talk, Tony. As you expect on the Awesome Comic Podcast.
Like I was in the room cleaner, lady room cleaner in the room.
Oh, what, the room cleaner, like a bottle of bleach?
Yeah. Well, the trouser press doesn't do it for me anymore. So,
oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were just...
carry on without me, then. Oh, listen, I'm listening.
Setting the world of the small press to order, really. And we haven't even got into any of the questions or anything.
No, I mean, that makes... Tony, join us. That's a good opportunity to go onto the questions.
Yeah, that
I'm ready in these questions.
Well, neither's Dan. I think Nick's the only one who has, so this is going to be interesting. Now, I think this isn't so much a question, but I think it's something we definitely need to make something of. John Bishop said, I know there are a couple such as the Gosh Broken Frontier Drink and Draws, but I'd like to hear about any more social meetups for small press creators in London for myself, but also in any other areas. Now, this isn't a question, but I think what we should do is have something on the group or something somewhere where people can, like maybe a thread of some kind where people can post where they meet weekly. Because I know there's drink and draws that happen everywhere, and they sound fantastic. Any of you guys been to a drink and draw?
Not for a while. There's the Art Model Collective, isn't there, that Jason Atomic runs?
I've been to that a few times.
But, if you put Art Model Collective into Instagram, I think it comes up in there, or speak to Jason Atomic.
Does the
Facebook.
Last drawing groups on in Gosh Orbital?
Yeah,
I'm sure he does
other ones as well, doesn't he?
Oh yeah. He does. Like, you I think he's got a regular life drawing class. Yeah. One in, might be in Bethnal Green and somewhere else.
I was going to say London Bridge, mate. That's what I'm going to say.
I think it is London Bridge. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Gosh did have one where they had a drink and draw at one of the local pubs.
Yeah. Right. They do a regular one at the shop, don't they?
Okay.
Yeah, I've just found it. If you go to artmodelcollective.com, that's you can find the dates and stuff. They do theme ones. They did like a Blade Runner one recently.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, you kind of like, if you're doing a drink and draw, you just kind of all go to a pub and you sort of literally drink.
Just sketchbooks and just, it's just a social event. I know, for instance, one that I know of recently, if you're in the Oxford area, Zach Simmons Hearn and Neil Cameron do one quite a few times.
Oh, okay, cool. They're good guys, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're obviously both from the Phoenix, amongst other brilliant comics. So yeah, I think if we put up a thread or something, so then people can just check them out.
Yeah,
and then, you know, because I there must be stuff around Bristol and the likes, you know, that I'd be able to make.
It's got
to
be in there. Yeah.
So yeah, so stay tuned to the page for that and get involved. Yeah. Anyway, to start us off, Tom Curry, good old Tom Curry, winner of many a prize on this podcast.
Recent competition, yeah.
Yeah. He just wanted us to discuss the price of digital. He says, I think it's a really interesting subject that you guys have touched on before. How much is too much for a PDF?
Yeah, we talked about this last week, didn't we?
Yeah. We did.
We asked them about it. And I think, because I think I made it clear to them, we weren't rude to them, but I think I made it clear that I thought £5 was too much.
Yeah.
There was a sharp, there was an audible sharp intake of breath at that moment.
You didn't couch it at all.
Well, they're into asking questions about their product, aren't they?
Yeah, that's fine.
And they were nice people.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And they said they researched it, and that was actually below the average price.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting answer. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I might have to listen to where she Mary mentioned the source of who recommended that you do your Kickstarters at that price, because that's definitely conflicting information to what I've and maybe you guys have heard.
And I mean, it all depends on the product, I guess, but certainly, for instance, if you're just doing like a... I mean, I've seen PDFs for £5. Obviously, for our American listeners, we're probably going to be talking about pounds and pence here. So,
yeah,
translate it in your minds for...
I think a pound is about $200. I think.
Oh, really? Oh, amazing. Yeah. Right, let's all something go over like to America right now.
But for me, basically, the paying for the PDF, for me, is like I read the PDF and then it's pretty much done.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a website entry fee where you have to pay to read the article. That's what I feel like doing. So paying in excess of a couple of quid. I'm going to kind of read this and then.
Do you not have a hard drive you save them all on or anything?
No,
like
I don't usually do that.
I save all mine. I think.
Yeah,
and sometimes I share them with you. Yeah, sometimes I share them with you guys, depending on.
Only legally. Yeah,
of course. I mean, mainly we talk about them on this show. That's why we share our comics.
I'm in the minority there of not hanging on to them.
Yeah, I've got like a separate hard drive I plug in and save them onto there sort of regularly.
Yeah.
And it's usually from the Dropbox, isn't it? Because we get a lot of Dropbox links, so we translate them into that, don't we?
Yeah. Certainly, when it comes to Kickstarters, I think if you're talking about a single issue, this is where I have the sticking point. Because I think when you get £5 and up, but it's a big collection, I'm not going to talk about that, you know, because I think... Obviously, if you're talking 100 plus pages, whatever, you know, maybe you could get away with it. But sometimes when people, for instance, would say £5 for a 30 page comic,
So I think it depends what you're, and I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, what, we'll see how
you
it
never
goes. I think it depends what you think you're charging for.
Yes.
So if you think what you're when you charge, say, I don't know, £5 for your physical comic, right?
Yeah.
You know, so the thing about how, you know, ebooks aren't particularly cheaper than the physical physical version, right? And the same with digital comics. Once you take out the sort of VAT bit of it on, you know, on the that you're paying on the digital that you're not paying on the printed. Right. Because we're a civilized country. if what you think you're paying for in a physical product is the printing costs, right? Then, obviously, when you look at the digital and you go, well, it's just bits, you know, it's just data. There's no, right? It therefore can't, why am I paying that amount for, you know, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
If you're saying, I want you to give me £5 for my comic because that's what my labor was worth, right? My creativity was worth, my time, my, you know, my talent. You know, I think that's what you're recompensing me for. Then the digital product, then, you know, I think you're in a different headspace.
Yeah.
It's a completely different headspace then. Yeah.
I mean, we start entering the world of you pay for art, don't you? You pay, you can pay anything for art. you could pay $1 million for a download. If people were prepared to pay for it, then they'll pay for it. Yeah. You know, I suppose you enter that. But I suppose, yeah, it's a different question to, do you think some people take the piss? I suppose. Yeah.
And some people do. Matter how much we love this medium and how much there are certainly works of art and etc., I think at the basis of it, comics, and this is going to sound like sacrilege, but stick with me here. Comics are a disposable medium. They're, you know, they're pick up, read. I mean, Dan doesn't even keep the fucking PDFs. Do you know what I mean? It's that quick hit of entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think because it's entertainment like that, people see it in a different sort of space. You know, people don't. It's like music. People spend months and months and months creating an album, but now how much do they have to charge? You know, people don't want to pay for that.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the majority of art disposable? Do you know, that's kind of where I sit.
Right, and I agree completely. Got your message.
Yeah. Everything's disposable except you, Tony.
Thank you. Yeah. And these pants I'm wearing because I've had them on 3 days.
That's true. They're also completely unwashable. Jesus.
Like me. But yeah, apart from a sort of fine art that hangs on it on a cathedral or a museum wall, isn't it most of what we see these days disposable in some way? I know we're in the world of Netflix where we don't keep a CD either anymore, do we? Yeah. You know, or a DVD.
It's understandable. Yeah.
Everything's just floating about in your head or in space, isn't it? I mean, that's about it. You know.
I was going to say, in regards to kind of digital wise, I haven't done a Kickstarter yet, but if I planned one, I would work out roughly how much, well, say what the printing cost was and how much I'd like to earn on top of that. And I would set that as a tier within the print copies.
Yeah.
And the digital would be a lower price, and anything on the digital would be a bonus. I mean, in no way I'm expecting to recoup my cost.
What's interesting about yours, Dan, is yours is also a webcomic to begin with, isn't it?
It's free anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people like to read the collections than, you know, click weekly. Do you know what I mean?
I think we found that out over the past. How long we're doing the show? People want their physical copies.
Yeah,
yeah.
When I did the Kickstarter for the last Slang pictorial, I had like the brain trust. I got a load of good eggs from the Facebook group and to like give me some, you know, show them the preview of the page and get feedback and stuff. And Ken Reynolds sort of said to me, you haven't put any digital on it. You haven't put PDF or, and I was like, no, because I don't like it. I just want it to be a physical thing. I want it to be a tangible object, you know. And I think, you know, I think it looks better. I think it reads better, you know. And he's like, right, well, because you haven't said that, it looks like it just looks weird. It doesn't have anything on it. Like, you need to either say there's no digital because, you know, I think, you know, the optimum way to experience my creation is, you know, through the physical object that I'm creating for you.
Yeah.
Or realize that you're actually leaving a load of money on the table because there's a load of
people that will only
want the digital, and especially, you know, your international backers and I mean, people who just want to take a punt and or just want to just sort of, you know, bung you a few quid just because to say, you know, good on you, you're making that thing, keep going, but I don't really want your comic.
The Edrington's book, that didn't have a digital tier, and they were very clear from the beginning, you know, this is for a print copy of this book, this is what you're going to get. This campaign is about print. I mean, they were quite clear about that on the campaign anyway, and did all right for them.
Yeah, I mean, does that say, for example, they said, right, you can't get it digitally? Would they have ended up with a lower number because people so desperately wanted it? And it's a great product.
I think maybe.
Possibly, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's more about the consumer rather than the product, isn't it? Really,
it's about their canniness as well. I think, you know. Yeah. I mean, I mean, there's no secret. I'm no-brow and not on a digital platform.
Yeah.
And it's something I think they're leaving. I definitely think in that case, and it's apples and oranges, isn't it? You know what I mean? But I think certainly in that case, they're leaving money on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The people that whose books they're appeal to are going to buy it for their kids.
Yeah.
To read on an iPad in the back of the car on long journeys and that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Or at bedtime or something like that, you know?
Okay, just right. Let's generalize this then for one nice simple sort of soundbite of an answer. I know it's subjective with the comic, etc., but let's just put a number. It's a 20-page comic, 20 pages, right?
Yeah.
How much is the most you will pay for that comic? Let's go from left to right. Dan?
2 or 3 quid.
Tony?
The most?
Yeah.
How are we going left to right?
I was wondering if you'd pick up on that.
Right, one out, all out. Right, we're done. Kung Fu walks away from this podcast.
Fucking bullshit.
I don't know, mate. If Tim Truman was drawing it, I'd pay a score, but I don't know. That's £20 for those listening.
See, well, that's based on the creator then. So, seriously, yeah, if he was doing it for a 20-page book, you'd pay £20.
Yeah, mate. I'd buy a leaf of his toilet paper for a fucking 100 quid. Do you know what I mean? So it's like.
Okay, if he's not doing it, if it's just if it's just a normal, like, it's a good comic, but
good
it's just,
small press comic.
Yeah.
Okay, 2 quid. Yeah,
2 quid. Nick,
are we digital or physical?
Digital.
Digital.
20. I don't.
It's a difficult one because there's so little to go on. But.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, that's the difficulty of this question. Yeah. That's the beauty of this question.
Look at it, that's how my brain works.
Comixology, right?
Yeah.
I won't buy anything on Comixology that's not on sale.
No,
you mean,
so I'm only buying stuff that's going to be like, if I've got to pay £2.99, it better have been, like, you know, 11 quid, you know, it's been reduced.
Yeah, fucking hell, yeah.
I'm not even going to put my hand in my pocket.
Yeah.
So I'm only going to... and I don't think I have. You know, to be fair, I've not been on Kickstarter very long. I've only been on it about a year and a bit, and I haven't backed that many projects because I'm tight. but everything I have backed has been for a physical book.
Yeah.
And the PDF is always like an add-on to that, and that's why I feel like it isn't. Because people put the PDF as, like, you know, if you get the physical, you get the PDF as well.
Yeah, I like that, you know.
You know, it's like, you know, you get it, you can have it on your phone, or you can have it, you know, you can read it, you know, blah, blah, blah. It creates it does in my head, the idea that, you know, the PDF is just an add-on, you know, it's not the thing.
Yeah.
See, I like the PDF, Nick, because if I back something that I really like, for example, McCune's books, I like to back both because I know sometimes it takes a week to get the physical copy, but I know that I'm going to get to read it ASAP. I mean, it's different with him because he sends me preview copies, but a lot of ones, I'll get to read it as soon as it comes out. Do you know what I mean? But I'll also have the physical copy. That's kind of, there's also that as well. There's all these kind of different areas, aren't there? You know?
Yeah. Also, I've taken a punt on people I don't really know. I don't really know the product. And all I've got is a Kickstarter to go on. And I've like spent a couple of quid instead of like 15 quid or whatever. Got the PDF and thought, fuck me, I've dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah. I'm the same. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I think if it's a 20-page comic, £2-3. Most. You know, but
I mean, I won't pay the same price for a digital that I can go and pick the physical copy up. That
I think
anyone who does that, you're fucking mad.
Yeah, you surprised me there, V. With so hi, mate. I'm surprised at you for that because I know first you love a bargain, but
don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's not. I'm not paying that for everything.
But when you said the Comixology said last time, it's like a quid a book. Fucking hell, I've got tons of books on my phone now that I haven't got through yet.
Yeah.
And like, so, you know, if we're going back to Kickstarter as well, it all depends on the campaign, doesn't it? For instance, Ryan K. Lindsay, the Dear Editor books, he was literally, it was just a digital only book, and he was essentially paying just to give the other creators he was working with some cheddar. So it was a couple hundred Australian dollars, and the comic, you got a 48-50 page book for $1.
Yeah, that's great.
Can I ask a question then?
Go on.
Do you get PDFs that you don't read, or comics from Comixology that you've you know, your to read pile, right? You've got your physical to read pile.
Yeah.
You've got, have you got a digital to read pile?
I do.
Like as soon as you click buy, it's in your inbox, whatever. The first thing you do is just read it.
Yeah.
You know, or do you just
I'm the most deluded buyer in the world. I buy all these things that are on sale.
Yeah. Yeah.
The four of us, you send me messages in the middle of the night saying, look, this is on sale. And then I fucking immediately buy it and I think, oh, I'll read that on holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a week's holiday about 2 weeks ago and I literally read comics non-stop and I've still got like fucking hundreds of comics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I see they've got a fucking Lone Wolf and Cub sale on.
Oh, God.
I saw
that.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, fucking hell.
I think it's the collections is where I have my to-read pile from the... Because normally with Comixology, I'll probably have my one or two, you know, the regulars that I'm going to read as soon as I get them, like two or three books, maybe a week at most. Mm. Sometimes I fall off them and then I have a little bit of a catch-up. But whenever there's sales on, you know, we talked about those ridiculous Marvel sales in the past, you know, I've picked up like 10 books. And now if I've got a long journey somewhere on a train or on a bus, I can just load one of those up on my phone and then just read it. You know, it's good to know that it's there. But yes, I do have a to-read digital pile.
Come on, mate.
I will be fucking buying that Ryan Ottley Spider-Man when it comes out. I'm not sure if that's next week or week.
No, that's out this week. Ryan Ottley's... as we speak, Ryan Ottley's Spider-Man is out now. The digital PDF was $3.99. Which it's 48 pages, and I did actually buy it.
That's a lot, mate.
I know.
It is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a lot. It's fairly standard for Marvel stuff, though. I mean, unfortunately, that's what keeps me away from a lot of their regular books.
I think
I'll
take a punt on one issue, but...
That's exactly what I was thinking. I thought, Ryan Ottley, Spider-Man, got to be there for the first one.
Yeah, I mean, you can literally pick the fucking physical copy up in a comic shop for that.
Yeah. Yeah, really? But how much is it? I mean, if it's 48-page Marvel book, how much is that print?
Yeah, it's probably about fiver, I reckon.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more.
Yeah,
you'd know, Tony.
A
48-page Marvel comic, how much would that go for in a comic shop?
£4 or something, £5. Yeah. Ridiculous money. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in my car with a geezer today, and he was talking to me. I was boring him about comics because we're on a long journey. And he said, yeah, but they're only like 50p. Christ almighty, I wish my bank balance were there.
You turn around and laugh at him.
To laugh at him for the rest of the journey. Okay, so that's we'll probably... I think the price of digital, or just digital in general, is an ongoing conversation. Yeah. But thank you, Tom, for that. Another interesting question here, which I'm interested to get your views on. Leston Pettigrew on the Awesome Comics Talk.
Yeah,
that's a made-up name.
That's really me. I groom dogs. I don't know if you know this. I go online as a dog. Hang on.
What do you mean you groom dogs? Why would you go online as a dog if you groom dogs?
As a dog of the same age as somebody.
Oh, I see. Grooming. Kind of grooming. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right.
And I get them out to the park and we sniff each other's bums.
Oh well, you know, that explains the way you act at conventions. Anyway,
nothing explains that.
No. One of life's great mysteries. Anyway, Leston Pettigrew, he gave us a couple of questions, but I think that the one that I'm going to pick here is, what is a big seller in terms of numbers?
Ooh, in the small press world?
Yeah, I think so.
500?
Do you think? Yeah. I'd be happy.
Yeah.
It's a single issue and it keeps selling. The next issue sells 500 and then you do a trade and you have to go to a reprint. Maybe I'd say 500 to 1,000.
Yeah.
It's good selling it, you know?
Yeah. And we live in a world of diminishing returns, haven't we, really? Yeah. So obviously the big seller will probably always be your issue one. But I think 500 is a number to be happy with.
Yeah, God, that's great.
It's one you keep happy, put it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give him a coat.
That's not to say we've ever done that.
Yeah, not to say we've ever done it, but if you do that, you know, it's brilliant. And
we ain't far off, boys.
Yeah. Well,
we've got the five down.
Yeah. But
thank you, Leston, made up Pettigrew. It's very kind of you. Apologise.
Also,
you are clearly
a
real person, although your first name isn't spelled. Is it E S T O N? Is that an I?
It's L E S. T-Y-N.
Is that a capital I, though?
Or is that an I? Are you actually looking at the page as we're talking?
Yeah, I got it on my phone.
Yeah, I didn't know you can multitask.
That's a great name.
Can't know. What do you say?
It could be. All right, then. Well, if it's an I, what would it be, Tony?
Eastern.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Let us know.
Please write in. Let us know.
Yeah, please write in.
We think you're cool anyway.
Yeah.
Send in a postcard to the usual address.
Yeah. Written in crayon.
Okay. Gareth A. Hopkins. Yes.
Yes.
The Alpha Flight podcast,
which is actually Vince one of my
Hunt, upcoming guest.
It could be. We'll see. I've been wanting to go on that for ages.
Yeah, I've been on it. Have you not been on it? Oh, okay.
Look, no one likes your attitude when you're like that. Anyway, he asked. He was interested to hear how people might move out of small press. I can see how some people use small press as a practice ground to build up the skills required for mainstream work, but are there opportunities for other creators?
Yeah, I think so. It's always been the big thing at Marvel and DC is if you want to get noticed by them, you publish comics elsewhere, don't you?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So small press can lead into maybe Boom or, Dynamite or something like that. But what about, for instance,
Gareth, as we all know, puts out some brilliant abstract comic work.
Yeah.
That's not, I would hazard to say, that's not something you go see at Marvel or DC. But how would he push his sort of medium onwards?
I don't know.
Do you mean it
depends what kind of skills they're looking for. Like if you were kind of looking aside from the artistic one, Gareth's getting that book, collating it and getting it out there to a market. Mm. Maybe there's skills that would transfer over into a bigger company, a comic company.
Yeah. And he's also, I think, with his medium as well, he's doing an awful lot of great exhibitions. What? Did your trousers fall off?
No, the fucking football, sorry.
You. That's a fucking pipe. You... clear that now. Watching the football whilst talking.
Unbelievable.
I believe he owes us a pint.
He owes us all a pint.
Yeah. And... it's on my phone. This come up with a message on. Okay.
I still can't from your reaction though tell what the score is.
we're not going to talk football.
Yeah.
When the show comes out on Monday.
This is old news.
Know by then.
But you know, all our lovely listeners will know that on this night. You really let us down, Dan.
On the 68th minute, Dan said you. I'm sure you know
why. Do you know what? I'm going to ban you. I would ban you from using your phone, but sometimes you use it to actually record the show.
One thing that I regret from the issue one of Cockney Kung Fu is right at the end of the first part. I'm not going to say it because I know it makes more work for Vince if anyone says. I didn't draw a little picture of like a little steamboat with a foghorn. That was I only thought it after I saw it in print. I was like, so in the collected edition.
Do you know what? Because you lot have been so childish, it's not going to be a foghorn this week. You just have to wait to see how I've made you sound ridiculous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we just put a capture of the word Dan shouted by Alan Partridge?
Still makes me laugh. Anyway, did we answer that question?
I don't know, really.
Yeah.
I think, it's the old story, isn't it? It's different for each person, but...
yeah.
I think there's a fine line between small press and indie press. Who knows which is which, do you know what I mean, at the moment? And I think certainly if you compared some of the prices the big companies are paying, they're not the super big companies, but the middle tier companies are paying artists. I've got to tell you, they're probably only about the same as a lot of small press artists are these days. You know?
Yeah, certainly.
There's definitely a blurred line, isn't there? And I think there's a sign of a lot of people moving over from Czar Jazz and Dog Breath into 2008D. You occasionally get that, as well. And stuff like Aces Weekly and the Phoenix and stuff. You know, there's people doing that who also produce their small press books. And
We said earlier about what you're doing this for, if you're looking to, I want to work for X comic company, you want to get like some samples under your belt and then actively go for them rather than sit around making small press comics, because you got to push for that. Do you know what I mean? Get your goal running and go for it. Don't just think someone's going to notice me, because that won't happen.
Because it's you know, it's that thing, you know, it's like don't ask, doesn't get. Right?
Yeah.
So like, you think so Kev Brett, Nottingham, and Artist Angst, you know. He just pitched to a it's like a War Games magazine. I'm not sure exactly the title. Sorry.
But, oh, I know about this. Yeah.
You know, and it's a, he does like a little kind of like a sort of Combat Colin, you know, from back in the day. You know, but it's kind of like, you know, it's based around you know, sort of military, sort of comedy, little strips that he does. You know, I'm guessing it's monthly, or you know, for this magazine. But he, you know, he pitched to them, you know, they obviously, you know, they didn't have anything like that in you know, in the magazine at the time. You know, looked at his style, loved it, and you know, and now he's got that, you know, extra. No,
that's good news, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I gave him a little bit of a nod on one of the stories, didn't I? I gave him. I think I sent you boys it, didn't I?
Yeah.
That was the shortest script I've ever written, and involved the word farts.
Well.
Good,
I think it's about kind of like, you know, looking, how can you, you know, looking outside, maybe like the obvious place where you think your stuff might fit or where you might be a good fit, but actually it might be, you know, the sort of comics adjacent stuff that actually is going to get you, where you can kind of get a foot in the door. And then again, it's just part of that portfolio that you're building up. Because if people see you as a as someone, oh, you've got a strip in this magazine, it'd be published by this publisher over here. I say, publishers can all fuck off, but you know, it is still seen as a badge in terms of just, you know, it's a, you're a safe pair of hands.
Yeah, I think that big climb over. I think that big climb over is to go from making comics to being paid by someone else to make comics.
Yeah,
from some form of organisation. I think that's a big step over.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, they're almost like, you know, leap, sort of stepping stones as well. Do you know what I mean? You have those people that make that step to being paid by a publisher. Then they go back to their own books, and you know, they've got that following, and they're off to the races.
Because somebody you go to will say, "Well, who's published you before?" You know, and to be able to say, "Well, I've been published by, I don't know, Titan or you know, No Brow or someone, and they paid me, and you know, I'm a published, paid artist, stroke writer, creator." You know,
it's for the two fronts, isn't it? One that you're dependable for the work, and the second one that you kind of you've got some
you're
kind of track record.
Yeah.
So take willing to take a punt on you.
And okay, next one. Gareth Slighthome, great creator that one. He asks, do people find a segregation even within small press? Is this down to choices of genre or other factors? Does that inhabit cross genre small press discussion? Not on here, obviously. That seems to be one of the most crossover friendly venues I've come across, to be fair. But
but definitely. You got like LCAF, that's a different crowd to what you'd find at Cheltenham and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's snobbery
MCM.
At all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of what fan base would go where to get that comic.
I mean, I certainly hope there's not snobbery. Because
I think it rears its head occasionally. I think it's more from a sort of point of view for me is people who think they're cool. I think we're almost out of that phase where people say, well, I'd never read a superhero comic. Mm-hmm. You know, like, really? Yeah. Well, you might find you'll enjoy a couple of them. Yeah. You know.
But I will say, flip side of the coin, you have those people who go, oh, I'm not reading one of those slice of life comics. Do you know what I mean? It comes across on both sides, doesn't it?
One of those hipster comics. Yeah. As well.
Whereas, you know, this show is a perfect example of go beyond your comfort zone. And you'll find some of your favourite books, usually.
Yeah. Like the one you talked about last week, Prince. To be fair, I'm to be honest to you, I don't think I'd have heard you talk about that one at the start of the show. When we started 3 years ago. But, you know, I was chuffed that you found that, because that's one I'm now after, you know?
Yeah. And if you can go back to episode 157 to find out what I was talking about.
There's stuff like I would put, might have rubbished in the past or sneered at, but like stuff that Singer Dragons put out, and it's kind of like, there's more to this than I perhaps thought. Well, definitely no perhaps about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I've been snobbed. I've been a snob over comics.
Yeah.
Plenty of times.
I'm a terrible snob in comics, and I'm quite proud of it. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think I know what I like, and I have a huge opinion that it's good or bad. You know. But it's more a sort of. Is it snobbery just because we think something's good or bad? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we've been at conventions. We've been behind the convention table, and one of us will pick up a book that we really like. The other doesn't necessarily like it.
It's
fine.
But
there's. I mean,
and if you don't like it, it's one of mine. You're wrong.
I think there's like, you know, snobbery in terms of taste, right? So, you know, you like I said, we've all got a taste. You know, you cultivate, you know your taste, and you become, you know, everyone thinks that like, you know, they're a connoisseur, you know, of what's good, and you know, and that's I think that's all fine. And I also, I think I've had the conversation before with fellow creators, friends, where it's like, you know, have you applied to such and such show? But I didn't get, you know, I didn't get a table 1 year, or, you know, I didn't get, or I just didn't think they were going to, you know, because it's curated, not because it's a, you know, in terms of the volume of, applicants, you know, you got a certain amount of floor space, you've only got a certain number of tables, you've got to get in early doors to get a place, right? So that's fair enough, you know. And I think I think that's the thing with like a thought bubble, you know, you've got to get in early, and you've got to hopefully you get squeezed in. But there are the shows that are much smaller, so like your Crouch End, you know, I'd love to go to Crouch End. It's fucking my manner. Right? Like, you know, I'm not going to get in Crouch End. Love or money.
Really?
Well, you know, if you're out there, if you fancy, you know, next year.
Nick products available.
Crouch End's like a show in a tent. I'm surprised that people get turned down for that.
Well, it's because it's because always I loads think of it's space. Fair enough, because it's a curated show, you know, right. And it's, you know, and so therefore. Someone's taste, someone's idea of, you know, the kind of comic that, you know, that they want to promote, and that they want to, you know, that thinks, you know, valuable, or, you know, artistic, entertaining, whatever it might be, what the agenda is for that, you know. So I think there are places, there are kind of avenues that are closed off to you because of this, you know, this idea of, you know, what constitutes, you know, the, and it is horses for course. I get it. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to get in a manga festival, but I'm not going to pitch to that. Right.
Yeah.
But like, if, you know, a manga kid walks past my stall at, you know, I don't know, at an ice, you know, they might decide they like what they see. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, you've got to actually be there to have a chance.
I don't think you should take it personally when you don't show. I'm not saying you, mate. No, I know you don't. Yeah. But I think some people need to sort of, you see a lot of recriminations, don't you? I remember Thought Bubble a few years ago. Do you remember there was a big kickoff about people who weren't getting in? Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I think you can't really take it personally, because having been on the other side and seen people organise LCAF, there's no real curating gods who think, oh, we could do that. It's like a fucking jigsaw puzzle that people scratch their heads at, and some people get in and some people don't, I think.
Yeah.
But I think, I think that might be the case. I mean, I'm sure it is, that, you know, because you see it from that side. But if you're, you're just starting out, as I remember, like last year, like my first year trying to do shows, you don't know what show's a good show. You pick the ones that you hear on here. You know, you think these sound good, and then, you know, you just stick a pin in a map, and you sort of think, what's, you know, I'll do that one. You know, some of them are, you know, not right for your product, and some of them are. You know, like something like an LCAF, looking at it, I would think, right, just take my, I'm just going to talk about my work, so I don't want to talk about other people. I would think, it's a bit, falls between two stools. You know, I've said this before, you know, it's like, you know, it's a bit too genre for the art crowd, you know, and it's a bit too kind of, you know, sort of slice of lifey for the sort of more genre people, you know, so it sort of fits, it sort of falls some, you know, I can envisage it, you know, being looked at and going, well, it's not for us, you know, if you organise that show. And it might not be the case. And then, but I'm reluctant to think, oh, fuck it, am I going to put together another, you know, because I've got to send a PDF, I've got to get some pages, I've got to write a little bit, I've got to do all this, I'm going to send it off, right? And so it becomes a kind of sort of self-fulfilling
I feel like this question could be an entire show by itself.
Can I just give one example, B? This, and this is one you know about, is when I first got this sort of freelance role at Nobrow, it coincided with us applying for a table at LCAF, right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard on the Thursday that they'd like me to help them in this freelance role, and on the Friday I heard we hadn't got a table. You know, these people are not as organised as we think. Don't take it to heart. Do you know what I mean? It's almost, I think it's almost like a dartboard sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
What a sexy dartboard it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, we're going to have
Nick, is we need a show that combines wrestling with comics, and then we're fucking straight in, my friend.
Yeah.
don't encourage me. Don't encourage me. right, a couple of small ones, and then I knew we got. Sorry that we haven't managed to get through to all of these.
We can search them out over the next few weeks, can't we?
Over the next few months, I think we can take some of these topics and turn entire shows into them. So don't worry if we've ignored you. It's because we don't like you. I mean, we're going to do an entire show about it probably. Now, just a couple more. This is more for the. For the podcast gang, I guess. Fred McNamara, he'd be interested to hear how other blogs, podcasts, etc. manage reviewing small press titles. He says, God knows I could ramble on about the adventures that they have on A Place to Hang Your Cape when it comes to giving press for small press comics, but I'd be keen to hear how you chaps manage the workload. I'll start. I'm just going to keep this brief. There's a reason that we call it the recommendations in my head, even though people may see it as a review section in the show. I don't view myself as a reviewer. I know on paper people could argue otherwise, but that's not how I see myself. For instance, sometimes I'm recommending books that I've had on my shelf for years because it's, you know, as for the time I get to do it, it's just whenever I get time to read comics, really. It's literally some weeks will go by and I'm so busy that I don't really get a chance to get to that to repile. So I go to the bookshelf and just go, people need to know about that book. And sometimes I'm lucky enough to pick up a weekly comic or go to a convention and pick up a comic and just go, God damn it, I need to talk about this next week because it's amazing.
I mean, I think you can, I think when we're, because we, it depends how we talk about a book as well sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we're going to dissect it, then that's kind of reviewing it, but picking out bits that we like in order to recommend. And I think I know where you're going to go with this, is you're going to say that if we had to review a book every week, then people would expect us to fucking plow into one and say how awful it is. But that's not what we're about, and that's not where we're coming from, is it?
We're now about, we love this, this is fun, and we think you'll enjoy it too, so check
it
out.
If you saw our WhatsApp groups and you saw the chats we have with Nick, we get fucking super excited about comics all the time when we just want to talk about them. That's literally how it goes.
Yeah.
And the one that we found this week that we're exchanging panels on, we're like, right, I know exactly what you're going to talk about every week because you're going mental about it on WhatsApp to me. Do you know what I mean? That's how it is.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Thankfully, but you know, this is just a little podcast that talks about making comics. We don't, you know, obviously Tony also reviews them on his own and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to give it from my point of view as well, is how do I manage it? And firstly, dear Fred, thank you for managing to put the name of your website in your question. That's very clever. nothing shameless there at all. Well done, Fred. To be fair, I get sent an awful lot through, and some I review, and if I really like them and I get enthusiastic about them, or I think that they have something interesting to say, and that'll occur in a minute with the one I'll talk about in a minute. And some of them sit there and I don't get around to them, and I'm very sorry. It's not always because I don't like them. It's just I don't get paid for it and I don't have time to do everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fine. That's
how it works. And there's no science to it, I'm afraid.
I'm pretty much in Vince's boat. Just kind of like something that I've kind of got. I like it and sort of say, go check this out. I liked this little bit or that little bit. Try not to bring the negativity to it. It's weird because it kind of contrasts earlier to in the show we were saying about when someone's tried to make something. I feel really bad for shitting on something that someone's fucking tried hard on and sent it in. It's really easy go to be negative like that. And
we see it all the time. We see people who are negative to get a flash on the internet, get people to read their stuff. You know, it's like the next flare up on the internet will say something's fucking terrible. You know, unfortunately, it's just movies is the space for this, but comics suffers from it occasionally. Yeah. Just to get eyes on their website.
The feeling of finding something that's absolutely fantastic, you're like, are people going to fucking love this?
Yeah.
And then you get the chance to share it and people pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, if we... Lovely listeners out there, how many times have you said to one of your friends, you should read this book because this is amazing?
Yeah.
That's
essentially
what we're doing.
We do all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
What was the one I sent you, Nick, this week? What was the one I sent you this week I said you should read?
This is going to make me... I don't read.
Was it the Elvira one I sent you? The Dynamite Elvira one?
Yeah.
That's cracking. Yeah.
They mentioned on the last show, Drugs and Wires, we talked about that fucking ages ago. Literally years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that was recommended in itself by someone else in the group. Or the group wasn't around at the time, but in the kind of the circle. Said, you should check out this. And it was fucking hell, it's a great recommendation.
I'll tell you what it was, Nick. It was Black Lightning, Hong
Kong Fui. Hong Kong Fui.
Because classic. Which goes to the back to the digital stuff.
Yeah.
I can't get hold of it.
Shit.
Straight sold out at my Forbidden Planet local to us. But yeah, no, I just did just one panel of it. And sort of thing where I hadn't even, I thought that Warner Brothers? Hanna-Barbera stuff. I thought that had been done. And then you, like you say, you just sort of show something. It was just like a panel, wasn't it? You just showed this looks great. And then I went into the shop on Sunday and they were like, oh no, sorry, we haven't got it. So I have to go and, you know, get it on Comixology. But now I've got that.
Yeah.
Just on the, and I did a little, not a post, but I did a little tweet thing. So I know one of the questions was about promoting your, you know, how do you promote your stuff? Mm. And one of the questions in the group. I remember I just did like a little image, and it was like I was trying. It was kind of I was trying to get people to the idea of if you like my comic, Wicked, just tell a mate about it.
Good chat.
But like not on social media, but like actually just, you know, in person, in passing, in an actual conversation with a human being, just mention to them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you know, like when you're having your water cooler moment about, you know, Love Island.
oh God. Don't...
Maybe you could also just go, oh, mention this. You like so and so? You might, you know, this was actually quite funny. I think you might dig it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a kind of a human sort of, you know, interaction level of promotion that can actually just be sort of.
Yeah.
It's like the whole of the world is some kind of WhatsApp group where people can communicate with each other.
Yeah. It's almost like we're like one massive social network.
This is blowing my mind. If only they could do that little GIF.
If only they could do that online, the world would be a much better place.
Exactly.
Anyway,
I realize when you meet up with people, you can use your face like a GIF to emote.
A GIF. You absolutely love a GIF. I think when you're reincarnated, Dan, you're going to be reincarnated as a meme. That's what you're reincarnated.
I would like you put GIFs on T-shirt, and I just walk around just absolutely like no emotion on my face. Everything's expressed through the GIF I have to load up on my T-shirt.
We want a bit. I want to see fan art with that. Right.
Mine would just get stuck in constant grumpy disappointment. The T-shirt would break. You know what I mean? Either that or slightly sexual aroused, you know.
Well, that's me with like every GIF that I've tried to send this last week to anyone. It's like, I don't know, I'm just doing it wrong. And all it does, it just sends like a still, one random frame. And it's always bollocks and like out of context. And it's just like, what? People just thinking I'm having like a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Ben Errington did that one with the emojis with like the football emoji and the arrow in the house. and I've been sending that to a few people to wind them up.
So. Isn't it you keep shouting at home, it's coming home or something?
Yeah,
and your missus is going to murder you.
Yeah, she's going to murder. Amazing. I mean, that's going to happen anyway, but I'm just bringing that day forward.
Yeah. it is true.
We're recording this early.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Anyway, yeah, we don't have time for another question.
No. Don't we?
Okay. not if we want to get through the rest of this show.
Right. Thanks to everyone who wrote back. In.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. And also,
there's a load of cracking questions here. Yeah.
Plus, a lot of great discussion on the Awesome Comics Talk group. So keep that discussion going, and you never know. Whether something you mentioned might make it into a future show. So,
but you've got like you can carry on this chat within the group. I mean, that's what it's there for, and you've got everyone's opinions and perspectives there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I apologise to Sam Webster for ruining Sonic the Hedgehog by saying it was erotic. He messaged me today.
To be fair, though, everything's erotic with you. That even like true. A Muller Light. Anyway.
Oh, now you're talking.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fruit Corner.
Oh, yes. I like the one with the vanilla balls. Anyway, should we have any...
So you can get those ones that's pink and then the brown. You can dip it in one and then the other.
you're a dirty
boy.
This isn't what I signed up for.
You shut your mouth. You love it. Right. Right. God, it all went wrong. We were doing so well, so highbrow, so informative.
You derailed that.
Oh, shut up, you slag! Right. Do we have any quick shout-outs before we do some recommendations?
No.
We don't want a shout out to anyone this week. So, but we love you all. So we'll put a shout out to the group. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Once again.
Yeah. Let's recommend some comics to the lovely people. Who wants to go first?
Should we let Nicholas go?
Yeah.
Nick, you go first.
Yeah.
All right, well, I just got to get it because I've hidden it.
All right. Oh, my God, where's he put it?
All right, so I received in the post today, this week, three zines from Jason... I can't pronounce his surname, sorry. Jason Garrettly. Garrettly. Right.
Oh, okay.
Who's a fantastic illustrator. If he did the black and white guest art on the Kickstarter, a fantastic image. Awesome. And he's been doing, I've been following him. I met him at a couple of cons and we got chatting and follow him on Instagram. And for Inktober in 2017, he did this bassists of the 70s, and so every day, rough about for the month, he did a little ink portrait of a I'm guessing because he's written underneath the bassist and the band, and I'm gonna I don't have a fucking clue who half these people are, but I'm gonna guess that they're I do recognise Bootsy Collins. That's it. But if you like mullets and
who doesn't?
Fantastic black and white illustration. Then he did that, and then in January he kind of got the bug, I think, because in January this year he did Janu Bowie, hashtag, which he started, and he did a picture of Bowie every day, in a different kind of, incarnation, so obviously very mercurial artist and, changing his image and stuff, so he's got all these fantastic pictures in that. And then in March, he did it again, and he did this hashtag March Bolan, where he did a tarot. It's amazing. If you go on his Instagram, every day was an image based on, I think, either a title or a lyric from a Mark Bolan, T-Rex song. And the images are just these amazing, like they're kind of riffs on pop culture from the 60s and 70s. So he's got, you know, like number 11 is basically Diana Dawes from Queenie's Castle, like as tenement lady. And it's just like you sort of go through this. He's got the Sweeney as London Boys, it's like number 14. And there's a football one, I'm going to guess is some footballer called the Slider. You know, they're just great. They're just amazing. Oh, it's fucking got Kendo Nagasaki.
Oh, nice. Now we're talking.
You know, they're just great. They're fantastic. Again, sort of black and white. But in his on his Instagram, they're all in colour. But he's been talking about putting them together as zines and getting them out and actually sort of starting to, you know, put his stuff out there and table at cons. So I think a couple of weeks ago he was at Birmingham zine fair, and I think that was his, he said that was his, like his first con, and it went really well, and now he's got a table at Nottingham, and that's sort of coming along, and he's got this this thing called the Drunk Beatles sketchbook, which is sort of amazing. His art in this is kind of like, if you know those sort of 50s kind of UPA animations, you know, Gerald McBoing-Boing, kind of Mr. Magoo, that sort of studio. It's got this really great kind of, so he's done like the, you know, the Beatles, you know, this is kind of like, you know, it's like the Yellow Submarine, you know, should have been. Just the art's just phenomenal, but this sketchbook is, it says on the back, I'm going to do Dan, this is my reading from the blurb. Drunk Beatles has languished in sketchbooks, old blog posts and wiped hard drives for close on 7 years. Every now and then the author would assemble the book, decry his meager talents and return the pages to the bottom of the drawer. Now in a fit of misplaced positivity, the scribbles, scrawls and doodles have been collected in a pamphlet for your general derision. It says Drunk Beatles will finally be published in autumn 2018. So this is kind of like a little kind of, almost like a little ash can, I guess, of, you know, the sort of the stuff that's going to come out in this. But yeah, I just think his stuff's great. It's got such character. It's just real kind of sort of pop sensibility, not just in terms of, like, you know, pop music, you know, but just that kind of, you know, if you like that sort of, you know, sort of mid-century modern sort of style of kind of illustration and animation, then Jason Garrettley is the man to check out. He's got an Etsy store, which is Play Record. So I think that's etsy.com/playrecord. But you can find him on Twitter at Jason Garrettley. So it's GARRARRTLEY. And his Instagram is J Garrettley as well. And if you're follow the if you subscribe to the mailer, to the Cockney Kung Fu mailer, tinyletter.com/Cockney Kung Fu.
Nicely done.
I'll be posting a load of stuff from these zines next week.
Just followed. Yeah, he looks good. That looks good, man. Yeah. I think he's a listener as well, I think. Yeah. He's certainly replied to a couple of things. Yeah. Cool.
Nice. Who wants to go next?
Shall I go next?
Go. Yeah. Go now.
It's a Kickstarter. I got Milford Green.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
By Samuel George London, his writer, and Michael Mikhail Hakkinen, is the artist. And I'll read the blurb. Apart from winning prettiest village in the British Empire in 1987, Milford Green is a normal village in the rolling hills of southern England. That is until one summer's evening when Alfie Fairfield, a socially awkward inventor, sees some kind of flying vehicle shoot across the sky and crash land into a field. Being a curious fellow who is interested in any type of machinery, Alfie investigates to find out we are not alone in the universe. It's a fantastic little comic. Backed it on Kickstarter. It's very... The artwork surprised me. I didn't expect it. It's very manga-esque. And it's interesting seeing like a kind of a comic set in 1897 in England with like a manga style, but it really works. It's a really nice, fun little adventure story, really well put together. Samuel done some great Kickstarter rewards. There's the pub that's mentioned in it. I've got a couple of beer mats from the pub, so that's a nice little touch. Yeah, it's a really nice little story. And if you want to check it out, go to signalcomics.com I think you might be able to buy a copy straight from there. I really enjoyed it. Great stuff.
I remember you chatted to him at True Believers this year.
Yeah, you? Really nice guy. He's kind of, I think he's his first kind of foray into making comics, and he's done it really well.
Nice. My pick for this week is going to be one that I wanted to get for ages, and I finally just bit the bullet, went on Etsy, and just bought all 5 issues of Giant Rhinos in Space.
Of course you did.
Yeah, by Sammy Boras. Now, this is a title that I've always seen on the scene, but like never just got around to getting hold of it. And it seems like when I announced that I got it, a lot of people were like, well, it took you long enough, didn't it? Cause I think quite a lot of our listeners have already got this, have already read it, and they already love it. Basically, the story follows like an indie rock band who find themselves competing against aliens in an extraterrestrial reality TV show. As you do, you know, that's standard sort of show. But no, basically, it's a comic series that Sammy actually created for like her final major project at like university, and then like she actually continued to sort of self-publish it after she graduated, which I thought was quite fascinating. But in terms of entering like the indie comics world straight out of the gate, this one absolutely sticks the landing. It's so good, so consistent as well. I know she self-published the issues over a period of years, like the 5 issue arc, but it's just ace. I must say, as I was reading it, I actually sort of thought, you know, these are the sort of comics I want to make. Not necessarily like subject or sort of tone, but just an absolutely pure, unadulterated indie spirit of it that really sort of, but with quality along with it. It's part sci-fi, part music zine, part sitcom, part satire. So it does quite a lot, but like it does it so well. I think you'll be hard pressed not to love it. It's got a real charm to it, and there's not enough. I mean, for me personally, music books don't always work. Do you know what I mean? When you, especially when you're definitely trying to do a live music performance in a comic, normally when I see those, it comes across quite flat. Do you know what I mean? It's like I've seen.
I'll talk about one in a minute, actually. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. But I will say, there's moments like when you see the giant rhinos, who are the band in question, who happen to go to space. When they play, you get I don't know. It may be just like a. Just because it just focuses on the performance or just the art, you get a real sense of like the performance and the rhythm. It's, I don't know, it just really worked for me. Sammy's like a big into her sort of music zines and comics as well. That seems to be the sort of genre she likes sort of working in, and she's done tons more work since this. And I know she can always be found at a convention in the UK. She's normally exhibiting we haven't chatted to her yet on this show, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time. So next time I see her, I'll definitely pick this up, because I actually just went to her Etsy store to just get this, because she sells like the 5 issue pack, I think, was £12, I think, which is great value for money. I just absolutely rinsed through them. The covers are great as well. I wouldn't say they connect, but they're all very similar. Like if you put them right next to each other, they'd make a nice sort of lithograph, as it were. Yeah, so if you haven't picked this up yet, you're missing out. And to everyone else that has read it, I'm sorry it took me so long. You can follow Sammy at Sammy Boras. And if you go to sammyboras.co.uk, you can find out more about this and all her other work. So there you go. That's mine. Tony? Nice.
Mine, apologies, because this is something I read on holiday. I haven't actually been home for 3 weeks. So it's something that also I mentioned in a different way in the mailer this week, and it's Peepland. Out of Titan Comics, written by Christopher Faust and Gary Phillips, art by Andrea Camerini, colours by Marco Lesko, letters by Jimmy Betancourt, and covers by Faye Dalton.
This looks great.
It's a really interesting book, I have to say. I'll give you a little spiel about what it's about. So it opens in Times Square, Christmas Eve 1986, in a peep show. For those, I was in New York in the end of the 80s, and there were still these sort of working peep shows. For anyone who doesn't understand what they are, mostly men would go into them. They put money in a slot and a panel would flash up, and you would be able to look into a room where there would be basically a naked lady sitting about. And that's the sort of level of what we now... I mean, it's just full-on anal now on the internet, isn't it? But back then, that was that was the sort of seedy end of the world. And... blokes would go in there wearing their Macs, and so it starts in one of them, and there's a stripper in a dark wig, and she offers other services to the punters who turn up in this room, and the punters pass cash through in envelopes down the side of the sort of glass to get her to do extra things. What they are, they don't actually make clear, but I suspect there's one panel that I sent you guys which might do. There's a porn filmmaker. He's just one of these sort of gonzo style filmmakers, and he's desperately legging it along 42nd Street. And he loses the person chasing him by running into one of the peep shows. And whilst there, he stashes a videotape in the lining of one of the chairs that these punters sit on. Not a chair you'd want to touch, I might add. And tells Roxy, who is the main character in this story, not to fuck with the tape. And he legs it off again. And there is a prostitute standing outside as he legs it past her. And she's saying, fist fucking, butt fucking, dildo show here. So she's this sort of heroin adult peep show prostitute just standing on the street and saying that. And for anyone who walked through Soho in the 80s, I think that was actually the sort of thing that was showered at you.
Jesus.
Of course, Roxy grabs the tape and it's marked up Xmas special. And it turns out something has happened on this tape. Something that I won't spoil, because this is a trade paperback of, I think, a 5-issue series. And something's happened on this tape, and of course the race is on by various people to get this tape. The gonzo filmmaker accidentally falls in front of a train whilst being chased, and it sort of takes off from there, and it's got some real twists and turns. I would put it as sort of 1980s punk noir, if that makes sense. It's got a sort of real feel to it. If you read the back matter, you discover that Krista Faust used to work in peep shows in New York City. When I read that, it suddenly became really interested in reading this book. You know, and it's set amongst 42nd Street and Times Square, and they go to CBGB's, and there, of course, her boyfriend plays in a punk band in CBGB's. Of course, he does. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's something. We talk a bit about this in this week's Mailer, don't we, Nick? About cliches in comics, and do we look back, and are cliches things that we now look back on? And I think if you're going to show, if you've got a punk character in New York, of course he's going to play in a band in CBGB's. And I found that a little bit of a cliche. Yeah. But it's a really good thriller. It ends on a really interesting note, and it does really tie the links together. But it is extremely violent, extremely sexual, and quite disturbing, actually.
Much like this show.
The reason I talked about it in the Mailer is because I think we reinterpret the past to suit the present, I think, a little bit. And there's a couple of twists and turns that take in the story that I think they come across as slightly unrealistic. Of course, all the cops in it are corrupt. Of course, the racist character gets his comeuppance. You know, I don't know whether that's something that has to be added to fiction. I would have preferred to have seen perhaps a more realistic touch to it. I think the art, there's a disconnect between some of the art and some of the setting. I think for Nick and I, obviously drawing a comic that happens in the 70s, we concentrate very heavily on, you know, what's there and what things look like and what the realistic sort of side of it is. But I think some of the punks, I think the artist, Andrea, who draws it, I think he or she draws punks from now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So some of them have like tattoo sleeves and stuff like that. And I don't know if that was perhaps as realistic in the 80s. You guys may be a bit young to remember. I don't know. What do you think?
I can't recall that kind of thing. No. It was, yeah.
Yeah. But I'd recommend it. I've read a couple of these. It's come out of this hard case crime series that Titan are doing, and I read about 3 or 4 years ago, I read about 30 of the hard case crime novels, and they re-released a lot of them, for example Richard Stark books and Donald Westlake and all these sort of people, and they also released some new stuff, and they decided to start on a comic line, and this has got a real bite to it. I'm going to say this little run, this little subgenre of Titan books is some of their best books. Everyone thinks Titans like a lot of Doctor Who that ain't a lot of it very good, and a lot of Star Trek that ain't a lot of it very good, and you know, this sort of thing. But I've got to tell you, this has got some real originality. I think they need to run with this, create a bit of a market, and develop what they're doing here. But I think it's Krista Faust's first comic, and I was impressed with her storytelling. The narrative really, really is clever, and it spreads out evenly with a lot of action and a lot of character and a lot of storyline across all the issues. Yeah, very good. Pete Land from Titan Comics, that's my one.
Nice
one. Yeah, nice. Cool.
What a load of cool comics we've got for you after a batch of healthy discussion for you to chew on. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe it. Yeah, but another great show in the pot. And yeah, lovely that Tony turned up as well, wasn't it?
Hey.
Yeah.
I cheered myself there. That was
hey,
right.
Well, I think everyone else was cheering when you turned up anyway. So it may have been because of the music I put with it, but you'll have to find out.
Oh, so good.
Yes.
It was.
I can't really hear that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we hope you folks out there enjoyed this week's episode. If we got anything wrong,
we probably have got something wrong.
Yeah, we definitely got something wrong.
Yeah.
Or perhaps what we've said has offended you so much you need to get in touch with us. Then email
that's
Tony.
How we get the numbers.
Yeah. Controversy makes numbers. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Controversial. Arrow is shit.
Yeah, you weren't there for that, Tony. You've got a lot to look forward to, my friend, before you even arrived. Yes. All you Arrow fans out there, email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. We'll be announcing like what we've got coming up, or maybe we'll just rant and rave. You know what we're like. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. The wonderful group that spurned all these... Well, not spurn, that's the wrong word for it.
It is.
What's the best word for them producing all these questions?
Spawned.
Spawned. That's it. Oh Jesus. It's because I'm not in the 90s. Well, spawn's better, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Spunked up.
Yeah, yeah. For all those
that's
lovely
cool
people that
earlier in the show.
Yeah, cool back. It all comes around in the end. But no.
We did two spunk up jokes in the same show. What amazing coincidence!
Yeah, it's obvious they work together. Anyway, they all came from the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk, which is the place to go if you want to just discuss comics. Thank you for listening to us. Whether it's on the website. awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe, get the word out. And if you do Spotify, we're on there now. So next time, check us out on Spotify. Just purely because I'm a nerd and I can check the stats. Do you know what I mean? And I can show these boys how well we're doing on Spotify. It's rather interesting. And if you listen to us on the other networks, like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Podmoolah Corner.
Moolah, isn't it Muller?
Is it? I don't know.
A Moolah Corner. Amazing. You know what to get, Tony,
in your pocket.
Oh, don't bring that back again. but anyway, we've made it through another one, folks. Thank you very much, Nick, for joining us this week. It's been
cheers,
awesome,
Nick.
My friend.
Yeah, cheers, Nick.
My pleasure.
Now, it's so casual, so cool. He is like the physical interpretation of smooth jazz. Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Mr. Esmond.
Ezohyz, or on neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk, or on that section on X-Hamster.
Oh, yeah. We all know that section. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Brilliant. You can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. You can find out more about my comic @TheRedMaskFromMars.com. And Nick, where can people find you?
I'm @NickProlix on everything apart from Facebook, because I don't like Facebook. I think I am actually probably @NickProlix on Facebook as well. And www.TheSheepAndTheWolves.com.
There you go. Definitely check that out.
Check that out.
Yep. So thank you very much, folks. Hope you have a brilliant week. We're going to go off and sip an ice cold drink now with our tops off.
I think I've got port. I've got port to drink.
Yeah.
When you listen to this on Monday, I'll be going down to look at the penalties, I think.
Oh, he's gone to penalties.
We're going to penalties.
Oh, so, Dan.
No, it's not. Oh, no.
Oh, Dan, do you know what? We're going to finish it now because we need to have a word with Dan Butcher about his behaviour over the past couple of hours. But for you lovely people out there, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always, what do they do, Nick?
What?
Yeah, you do that. See ya.
See ya.